Sairam, dear listeners, on this beautiful, cool and refreshing Thursday afternoon at Prashanthi Nilayam, we would like to welcome you to yet another segment of Afternoon Satsang. As always, I am Arvind from Team Radio Sai, being joined by Brother Prem from Team Radio Sai, and we both offer our most humble salutations at the lotus feet of our dear Swami, who is ever present with us in our studio, the center of the spiritual universe, Prashanthi Nilayam. Our gratitude to you, Swami, for this great blessing. Today, the topic that we have taken up is something that is close to a million hearts. That is something that Swami has exhorted on so many occasions, so many times. Nama Smarana, the remembrance, the singing, the chanting of the divine name. Something that is so very easy and yet something that has so many great benefits. I'm sure that this satsang will help us relive some beautiful memories and at the same time inspire us to take up this sadhana, which has been prescribed as the best sadhana for the Kali Yuga by our dear Swami.
Sairam Arvind and Sairam to all listeners. Yes, indeed, Namasmarana is a very, very special aspect of Swami's message, because Swami would often say, and you know, the four yugas which we talk of, the yuga of Satyuga, which is supposed to be the most perfect one, then you have the Trita Yuga, followed by the Dwapara Yuga of Lord Krishna, and then Kali Yuga. Swami would say that each yuga has a means which is effective to reach your goal. And Swami would say for the Kali Yuga, the one is Namasmarana. In fact, there is a Sanskrit quotation which Swami uses, because I've not got it here to play, but in that Swami says, it is indeed, you know, who is the novelist who started the best of times and the worst of times?
Oh yes, I think The Tale of Two Cities.
Tale of Two Cities.
Charles Dickens, it is the best of times, that's how he starts.
In fact, that Sanskrit shloka is almost like that. You know, it says Kali Yuga is supposed to be the most dreaded of all the yugas. But he says, yet this is indeed a very special yuga too, because the means to reach your goal is so simple. And that means is Namasmarana.
And you know, I was reminded of this just as I was listening to the bhajan that was played before we start the segment. Mm-hmm. The bhajan goes, Hum sab milkar mangal gaye. It means, let us all join together to sing of auspiciousness. Now, in that bhajan is also another subtle point that Swami makes about Namasmarana. It is not, Main baithkar mangal gaun. It is not about, let me sit and sing the Lord's glory. It is, let us all congregate and sing about auspiciousness. There is a very, very profound impact that comes in when we sit together and sing together. That is another subtle point that Swami always makes about Sankirtanam and Kirtanam. Now, Kirtanam is, it's like an individual affair where an individual sings for the fulfillment of his or her desires or prayers. Sankirtana, sang means
community.
So singing, community singing, Swami always encourages, be it sitting in a single place as in a bhajan session or going about as in a Nagar Sankirtana. Swami always, you know, it is not called Nagara Kirtana, it's called Nagar Sankirtana, because it's done as a community, and Swami always emphasizes the magnificent power in community singing. In community singing of His name, of God's glories, of God's leelas, of God's mahimas. And since this, we are just about to have a global community singing His name and glory for 24 hours, as this Saturday will be the day for the global Akhanda Bhajan. I think this is really a very apt time, Prem, that we spend time on understanding the who, why, when, where, what and how of Namasmarana.
Definitely. You know, we will be going into the speciality of Namasmarana and what kind of benefit it can give to a spiritual aspirant. But before that, you know, this idea of bhajans, as you said, Sankirtana is when you sing together. And Swami says that when you sit alone and sing, when you sit and pray, more or less your prayers will be individualistic or for a personal benefit. But when you sit together in a group and sing, you know, it forces unity onto the group because you have to sing as a unified group. So Swami says that without much effort, even the prayer becomes universal. Even the prayer becomes for the benefit of a larger community or larger section of individuals. And Swami says that's the special thing. And very interestingly, dear listeners, we are very glad that, again, it's a beautiful coincidence that today we are talking about Namasmarana and Sankirtana, and today happens to be the Guru Nanak Jayanti. And Swami says this tradition of Sankirtan, this tradition...
Guru Nanak Jayanti meaning the birthday of Guru Nanak, the founder of Sikhism.
Right, and Swami says this tradition of singing together or community singing or the bhajans as we follow it in Prashantanilam, where a person sings and the group follows. This tradition was started by Guru Nanak. And to speak of Sankirtan, to speak of Namasmarana on Guru Nanak Jayanti is indeed a very, very special thing. And it's a coincidence that we realized only this morning. So again, it's Swami's hand mysteriously at work.
Really, so we offer our most humble salutations and pranams at the lotus feet of Gurudev Guru Nanak Ji and seek his blessings. And we are so grateful to him that it has been arranged in such a manner that we are speaking about community singing on his birthday, we can call it. I mean, if at all the divine can have a birthday in the human form, yes, on his birthday we are talking about this kind of community singing. So as you said, Prem, we are really grateful for that. You know, you were saying about the advantages of group singing. One more thing that strikes is, many times I have seen this happening personally to me. I'm not a singer, but I often get opportunities to speak and share about Swami. So it happens that when you go to somebody's house or when you go to a center or you are at your own home, when we have dinner, for example, with parents and others, every time, you know, people would love to listen to stories and glories of Swami. So I often face this where people say, you know, tell something about Swami. That is a easy thing when, if I can put it in that way, when I'm in the mood, when, you know, when you're charged, when you're feeling positive, it becomes so easy. Stories of Swami just flow. But some days, you know, you are just silent and you're not in a mood to speak, and people will ask you, can you speak about Swami? And you just don't feel the flow. But you are forced to speak. That's how you feel. In such circumstances, I've observed, you know, many times I've observed that, suppose there is Brother Amay, whom we had on the satsang some weeks ago, mm-hmm. or somebody else, you know, one more brother or somebody, if it's say about 4 or 5, if we can call speakers, mm-hmm. so even though somebody is asking me, I'm not in a mood, I just leave it, somebody else starts speaking, and after a while, you know, something that he or she said triggers something in you, and you start coming out, slowly everybody starts coming out, and you know what, on such occasions, the best come out from everybody. Though initially you were in no mood to speak, I feel that what as a talker or a speaker we experience, the same thing happens in a bhajan community singing. When you go for a bhajan singing, actually your mind might be filled with so many problems, so many different thoughts. You might not actually be feeling the mood to sing a bhajan or do anything like that. You just may want to be left alone. But the beauty of community singing is, even if there's one person who is in a very positive high, he's in a very energetic frame of mind, in a devotional frame of heart, that can get rubbed on to entire community, and the entire community joins in, and it becomes a magnificent occasion to remember. So this kind of rubbing off positivity onto each other, rubbing off divine feelings of devotion and love onto each other is possible in Sankirtana, which is very, very difficult in Kirtana. Because here, not only are you yourself available to sustain your energy and love, the other's energy and love also sustains you. So it is definitely, as Swami puts it in Telugu, Kalasi Melasi Perugudam, Kalasi Melasi Tirugudam. Let us go together, let us grow together. That's what happens in community singing.
Very beautifully put. You know, there's another aspect which Swami talks of. Mm-hmm. Very scientifically Swami speaks. You know, very beautiful. Swami takes the example of, say, radio waves. Mm-hmm. Swami says, you know, a program is being broadcast, like ours. Of course, ours is over the internet. But in those days when we used to have radio waves and AM and FM frequencies, mm-hmm. let's say a radio program is being broadcast. Swami would say that vibrations are being sent out, and you have equipment which can, tune in and give you those vibrations in a form that your ear can decipher and listen to.
Mm.
Right? So Swami says the vibrations are there in the atmosphere, and you just need a tuner to draw that, this one. So Swami would say that there are many vibrations, but there are only a certain vibrations or certain frequencies which your ear can, you know, pick up and give you a kind of a sensible, audible frequency. But there are so many other frequencies and waves in the air. Swami would say, similarly, when you sit in a community and sing, when you do bhajans, the amount of good vibrations which go out into the air need not be necessarily, you know, something which you can cognize with your ears or with your other
sense organs,
but that is something which you will feel. And Swami would say that's why sankirtan, or sitting together in a group, and you know, you charge the atmosphere, you kind of send out very positive vibrations into the air, and it is not only for that area where it is happening or only for that building where the bhajan session is happening. Swami is saying you're just sending it out into the open, into the world. And that is the essence of Swami saying that global Akhand Bhajan, because if there is a one particular time when people from all across the globe, in different parts of the globe, in different countries, in different cities, sit and at the same time do bhajans, imagine the amount of good vibrations which would go out into the atmosphere, how the whole world will benefit. It is not only for the benefit of Sai devotees, of, you know, those people who are doing bhajans or believe in the efficacy of bhajans, but for the benefit of everybody, one and all.
Yeah, you know, noble thoughts and good feelings are like incense sticks. It's not as if they spread their fragrance only to the person who lights it. Whoever lights it, it is going to spread everywhere, and that's what happens with good vibes and feelings that, or feelings of devotion that get generated during a satsang, during a sankirtana session. I remember an elder once being asked as to what is the benefit of, you know, what is the benefit of Namasmarana, or taking the Lord's name, or singing the Lord's name. What is the benefit? The answer was so beautiful. He said, why don't you try it for a week? I promise you, try it for one. I mean, his confidence was so high. He just said, you try it for 1 week. In 1 week, you will notice the change. And after that, you will not seek reasons to do Namasmarana or Sankirtana.
Mm-hmm.
You will automatically do it because you will see how it benefits you. Promise me that you are ready to try it for 1 week. I was really stunned, and I myself have tried this. You know, I am convinced definitely about the efficacy of Sankirtana and Namasmarana. And I try to do, for example, my personal favorite is the Sai Gayatri. Whenever I become conscious that I am free and I am not having anything to do, I start, you know, just mentally, first it starts with me slightly lipping it maybe. But after that it becomes a kind of internal chanting. In the sense, I'm aware that I'm chanting, but there's no sound emanating from my mouth. So whenever I get conscious, I do it even to this day. And I can see the difference, Prem. I can see the difference within a matter of, say, 20, 30 Sai Gayatris. I'm feeling so much more positive, so much more good, so much more nice. And that goodness, that positivity rubs over to anything that I'm doing, anybody that I'm meeting, and this has happened every time. So now I don't seek any proof for why should we do Namasmarana or why should we sing the Lord's glory, because I have personally experienced it and it makes me feel so good. Isn't that a reason enough? So whenever somebody asks me also, you know, what is the impact of Namasmarana or chanting God's name, I have started using that elder's answer. I tell them that, can you spend 1 week of effort doing it? Because once you do that effort for 1 week, you will realize that from the next week onwards, you don't need to actually put in effort, because this is something that is benefiting you. It's like saying, I don't want to cook because cooking is effort. Once you enjoy the delicacies, you don't actually curse cooking, because you know that it's going to give so much joy. It becomes like that. And I'm also praying that a time will come when this becomes part of me. Like, as we do things involuntarily, things go on, my heart keeps beating, my stomach keeps digesting. I just hope that Namasmarana becomes a part of me, because it is so, so beneficial and so, so peace-giving.
And that is the essence of anything that you do good, you know, when you feel that something has benefited me and I want to share the benefit with others, and you know, instead of just sitting and enjoying it ourselves, go around telling people that I've tried it out, it really works and it really gives me so much joy. And this idea of going out and putting out good vibrations, if you look at it, Arvind, you know, a good part of the day of a good part of teenagers and young adults goes in the social media. So why don't we go and put these good vibrations in the social media where people are there most of the time, and instead of seeing only things which make them laugh and which make them, you know, enjoy, why not go and do something which will say that, oh, there is so much good in the world, there is so much peace, and there are people doing things for others, for the pleasure and joy of others. And dear listeners, at this point, we would like to inform you that we've started one such initiative for this global Akhanda Bhajan. We want you to, we are sure that many of you all around the world are having your own Akhanda Bhajan in your own centers, in your own samitis. It would be amazing if you can take pictures of these sessions and post them on the social media.
On Facebook especially.
Yeah, be it on Facebook, on Twitter,
or
on Instagram.
Google Plus.
Right. With the hashtag, that is #GAB, that is capital G, A-B for Global Akhanda Bhajan 2014.
So that is hashtag GAB2014.
Right. And that way, I mean, all these pictures from all around the world, not just from India, from everywhere,
will get tagged along this
under one category.
And anybody who just clicks on the hashtag GAB2014 will get to see all the beautiful bhajan sessions that have happened all around the world in the Global Akhand Bhajan 2014.
Exactly. And this is a new campaign. We are trying to push devotees to, you know, spread these good vibrations which Swami has blessed them with in the social media. So we are starting with the Global Akhanda Bhajan. And following that, we also would love to have pictures of devotees involving in service, also being tagged with Sai Love in Action, the same hashtag, Sai Love in Action. That again will be an effort to combine all the media which is related to service by samitis and centers all around the globe. So, of course, that is one part of the news. Coming back to our topic and talking about Namasmarana, you know, Arvind, we've heard of Swami talking of the ninefold path of devotion, where he would say Shravanam, Kirtanam, you know,
Vishnu Smaranam.
If you look,
Vishnu Smaranam.
Right, we are talking of Smaranam here, Vishnu Smaranam or Namasmaranam. And before we come to Namasmaranam, if you look at Kirtanam and Shravanam, you know, many devotees, I think the first few devotees from the Kuppam family, or we've spoken about them, who came in the 1940s, they speak of how they were just walking down an alley or a road in Bangalore, and they heard bhajans. They heard people sitting and singing bhajans. I think one of those devotees, in fact, walked in and found Swami as a teenager sitting there in the altar, and that's how they had their first darshan. But imagine, they're just walking down the street, they might be having other things to do, they might be in the middle of a task, but just hearing something which is floating by the air, they get attracted to God. So that is the first step, Kirtanam, where you might not be doing it consciously. You might not be going out to do that. Of course, there are people who would go and listen to a satsang, or some of our listeners who have, you know, in the middle of all their day's work, they stop, tune into Radio Sai and listen to afternoon satsang. But there are others who might just be listening to it by accident. So Kirtanam can actually happen by accident. But once when you hear, when you get addicted, as you said, you know, even when you are not in a mood.
Shravanam can happen by accident.
Right, Shravanam. So even when you're not in a mood to speak, when you start listening, when you start hearing the glories of the Lord, you also want to speak. You also want to share. And that is the next step, where Kirtanam. Kirtanam need not necessarily mean singing, but Kirtanam is when you want to spread the glory of the Lord. Kirti means fame and glory, right? So that is when you, a certain amount of involvement comes compared to Shravanam. But the third stage, which is Smaranam or Namasmaranam, which we're going to talk of, is, as you said, when you try it out, if you tell a person, you just try it out for yourself, and when you try it out and it works, you do it no matter where you are, whether you're alone or you're in the company of others, you are constantly thinking of the Lord and His glory. And that is Smaranam, where, you know, you don't need to hear or to verbally voice out your, you know, feelings. You're just anytime, all the time, thinking of the Lord.
So now we move on to what we can call as possibly the first question of Namasmarana, that is the topic for the satsang today, the why, what, who, when, where and how of Namasmarana, the why of Namasmarana. Of course, as I said, you know, the easiest thing is, if you want to know why Namasmarana, do it for a week and you'll realize why. But theoretically, there are definitely advantages of Namasmarana. And Prem, let us try to go through these advantages one by one. I'm sure that this list is very informative, if not exhaustive. I'm sure there'll be many, many more advantages. But from whatever we have gathered from our research and from Swami's discourses, one of the first advantages of Namasmarana that comes in is mind control. You know, the mind is like a horse. That's how it has been compared to, a very, very restless and always wanting to do something.
Right.
And Swami tells the story of a genie. You know, a person wanted a kind of, this is what happened. A person comes across a genie, a demon, a rakshasa, different ways of calling it in different languages and different cultures, but basically a magical being. And this magical being is able to fulfill all his wishes. And when he sees that this is something phenomenal, he says to the magical being, "Why don't you come and reside with me?" The magical being says, "I will reside with you only on one condition, that I should never be jobless. I always need to have some work to do, otherwise I will gobble you up." So the man says, "It's fine, don't worry, I got plenty of work to offer you, you come with me." So that's how this magical being, the genie, starts staying with the man. And the man first says, "You know, my house is little old, I want a new house." The genie rebuilds it in no time. Then he says, "Why don't you go and till my fields, grow crops?" The genie does it in no time. The man then starts giving more and more demanding work, more and more work, so much so that everything is fulfilled by this genie.
Mm-hmm.
And after that, the genie immediately comes back and says, "What more? What more?" The man is now unable to get time to eat or sleep because constantly the genie is pestering him with, "Give me more work, give me more work, give me more work." And finally, he runs out of work to give to the genie. And the genie comes and says, "Now that you have no work to give me, let me gobble you up." That is when the man runs to his guru. He falls at the feet of the guru and says, "Guru, I don't know what to do with the genie now. You know, it's going to eat me up. It has come to a state where I am unable to control because whatever I desire, it has fulfilled. And now it's going to gobble me. Please save me. Only you can save me." The guru then gives him a very, very nice solution. He says, "You go and put up a pole in front of your house. And when the genie asks what work to do, tell the genie to go up the pole, down the pole, up the pole, down the pole, till you tell it to stop. When you have a next task for it to do, summon the genie, give it the task. After the task, again, put it back on the job of going up and down the pole." And the man says, "Wow, thank you, Guruji. This is a very, very elegant and nice solution." And that's what he does and gets saved from this genie. Whenever the genie has work to be done, whenever the man has work to be done, he calls the genie and tells it to do the work. When that work is complete, goes back to its task of climbing up and down that pole.
Mm-hmm.
Swami then says that genie is our mind. Our mind constantly needs work. If it doesn't have work, you know, we have heard that famous proverb which says, "An idle mind is a devil's workshop."
Right.
Definitely it becomes a devil's workshop. That is when we indulge in wrong, we indulge in evil, leisure. And leisure is something that the modern world has gifted us in plenty because of growth of technology. We don't have to strive for our food, for our water. At least a majority, whoever is listening to this broadcast, you will definitely have a device to play this broadcast. And so therefore, don't have to think about how, like primitive man, don't have to think of hunting for food. Don't have to think of, you know, searching for water. All of it comes. So a lot of leisure time is there. And the mind has nothing to do. It can become a demon. And the pole that the man put up in front of the house at the advice of the guru, you know, Swami says, is the Lord's name. Often the guru would be the one who would initiate the person into the Lord's name. So it is symbolic that the guru offers this pole because the guru offers the Lord's name, and it can be any name. And the mind is a demon. Whenever it has no task, Swami says, send it to the pole. That is, send it to the Lord's name. Let it dwell on the Lord's name. Let it go up and down the Lord's name. And, you know, beautifully in another discourse, I forget which discourse it is, Swami is saying, if you notice, Nanak. Today is Guru Nanak Jayanti. So Nanak, it's two sounds, two syllables. Nanak, Hari, Hara, Krishna, Rama, Sayi, Allah, Eshu, which is Jesus. All these, you know, Swami says, see, that's why it comes in two syllables. It is to show the universality of the Lord name, so it doesn't matter which name you take. Ensure that whenever your task, what you have to finish is done, after that let that mind dwell on the Lord's name. That is the easiest and most effective manner in which you can keep the mind under check, you can control your mind so that you are able to focus your energies on the task that needs to be done and ensure that you don't get pulled into negative activities. So that is one big advantage of Namasmarana.
Right. But having said that, you know, when you say that it is a means to keep your mind occupied when it is idle, so one might wonder, like suppose somebody says that, why not I think of something else? Like suppose when I have free time, when I have work to do, I do. The time when I don't have anything to do, I'll sit and think of an iPhone 6, which I want to possess. You know, why a Lord's name? Why God's name? And this is where Swami's other important message comes in. Why is it important to take the name of a divine persona? Why is it important to take the name of an avatar or take the name of one of the descriptions of God? I think a story which Swami says in the Ramayana, with regard to the Ramayana, kind of comes to mind, where Ravana, when he tries to convince Sita that she has to wed him, you know, he takes the forms of many people. He goes in the form of a Brahmin, and he goes in the form of one of the Lankinis and tries to convince her. And in fact, even takes the, takes a plate with a head of Rama, as though he has, killed Rama. But nothing seems to work. When one of the ministers of Ravana tell him that, why don't you take the form of Rama? And if you go to her in the form of Rama, then she will come to you. She'll be yours. And that is when Ravana makes a very, very beautiful statement. He says, if I take the form of Rama, I will have no desire for Sita. Imagine, because he says that form of Rama itself is so very special that if I take that form, I lose all desire for anything worldly.
This is definitely true prema. I am telling this from personal experience. I won't go into the details, but the world, is filled with so many things that arouse your anger, your desire, your whatever, all the subliminal, the animal tendencies. Definitely it is filled with it, and it happens. At such times, again, that was 1 week I'm saying. Now, 10 minutes. Just delay the strong desire to fulfill whatever is arising within you for 10 minutes. And in those 10 minutes, take the Lord's name. You will really be able to appreciate what Ravana said there. Because that is what happens. When we take Swami's name, when we take, any God's name, Rama, Nana, Krishna, Sai, Allah, any name, there is some magic about the name. There is some magic. I remember, speaking to one of the brothers and one of our brothers from the university here, and he was saying that, just imagine, these are the names that has taken, for example, Tukaram or Ramdas or different saints. It has taken them to an infinite empire of a cosmic empire of infinite bliss. It is that name means what greater marketing and advertising do you need for that name? It has shown there are so many success stories. So coming back to your question, do you have any success stories of a cosmic empire of infinite bliss being won by thoughts of an iPhone 6?
Exactly, that's the beauty, because there is a inseparable connection between the name and the form. And that is why taking the name of a Lord, taking the name of, why do you have God coming down in a human form and playing out a drama of, a cosmic drama? That is because it associates a kind of power and vibration to that name. So that is why when the name is taken, Swami has said many times, the name actually replaces the form, or the name has the ability to call the form where the name is taken. And it is in this context which Swami says that very beautiful story of how the name is equivalent to the form, isn't it?
Exactly. That is a story of, it is often called as the Krishna Tulabhara.
Right. Tulabhara means
weighing.
The weighing machine. I mean the traditional weighing scales.
Tulabharam. Tulabharam is when you use the weighing scales to equal the weight of, say, whatever. You know, in the olden days, it was custom and tradition that on a person's birthday, on a king's birthday especially, mm-hmm. the king weighs himself in gold.
Right.
And gold equivalent to his weight is distributed as charity. Or it could be anything else. A slightly lesser rich person would possibly distribute grains equivalent mm-hmm. to his weight.
A lot of traditions. I think the other tradition is in a family where there's a, you know, they've not had children for a long time. When the child is born, the weight equivalent to the child, or they would say that during the 7th birthday or 8th birthday of the child, the weight equivalent of the child in gold will be given in charity. And it is a kind of tradition where they buy the child from the Lord. It is like, you know, they say the child is yours, I bring it up. So at the age of 7 or 8, they buy the child with equivalent weight of gold. So, you know, different traditions to make people do good, I guess.
Yeah, and at such time they would have hoped that people are fit and
right.
you don't have a fat king where more gold has right, to be right. given. Anyway, coming back to this Tulabharam, this is a very, very famous episode where it is Rukmini and Satyabhama,
right.
the two wives of Lord Krishna. It is often portrayed that Satyabhama is very, very possessive of Krishna and she wants to always own Krishna. And Rukmini is a more large-hearted among the two wives. And she is the more humble of the two. She is not having pride. So Satyabhama, I'm right, right? It is Satyabhama.
Right, Satyabhama.
Yeah, Satyabhama. So Satyabhama, before, I think it's Krishna's birthday,
mm-hmm.
she says that she would offer gold equivalent to the weight of Lord Krishna.
No, actually, what happens is, as always, you know, the mischief maker Narada gets into the picture.
Aha, okay.
And mm-hmm. Satyabhama asks Narada, how do I have the Lord to myself?
Ah, yes,
you know, because
okay.
she says that, you know, Krishna is, I mean, there are so many people who worship Krishna, there are so many women who are, you know, fond of Krishna. I am just one among them. How do I have the Lord to myself?
And possessive.
That, right, exactly. And I think the main idea in her mind is Rukmini. You know, how do I... Because...
The arch rival.
Right, because Rukmini is an embodiment of a very, very sattvic devotee. And understandably, Krishna is quite attracted to a devotee of the order of Rukmini. So that's what Satyabhama wants, to draw Krishna to himself. And
to herself.
That, to herself,
and,
sorry.
And you know, this is not as if to say that Satyabhama is any mean lady.
Right.
During the Deepavali satsang, we spoke of how Krishna annihilates Narkasura with the help of Satyabhama. So
right.
Satyabhama is actually goddess earth.
In fact, it's very interesting. You know, even if you look at our relationship with Swami and students, many times Swami would kind of encourage this kind of possessiveness in students and devotees towards Swami. Because Swami would say that, you know, there is no rational when it comes to your love. You know, you don't share the Lord. You try to grab him and this one. And when it becomes a little bit egoistic, the Lord steps in and corrects. But
that's
as long
it. Because,
as,
you know, it is very, very good that you want the Lord for yourself. But it is ego that makes you think that it is only one person who can have the Lord for himself or herself. If anybody else has the Lord for himself or herself, then it goes. It is not like that. The Lord is like the light. Everybody can have the Lord for himself or herself. And so, yeah, that is a positive and negative of it. Swami would definitely encourage everyone to want to own and possess Swami only for himself or herself. But in that pursuit, if he or she tries to, you know, block out or tries to indulge in negative behavior towards others who are also on the same goal, that Swami would not encourage.
Right. I mean, it's a very subtle thing, and I think it's only between the Lord and the devotee. It's very difficult to
judge others.
But nevertheless, you know, when that feeling comes out of pure love, you know, very, very, some kind of, you know, your devotion can also be rajasic sometimes. It's not always sattvic. You know, you want to grab, you want to be there all the time. So, Satyabhama was that sort of a devotee who still was a devotee, who still was
in this instance, at least.
And again, every episode which comes in any of the Puranas, any of the scriptures of any religion, it always comes with a beautiful message. And what's necessary is to see the message and not get lost in the details. So the story goes that, you know, she kind of voices this fear of hers and this desire of hers to Narada. And that is when Narada says that, see, you're the wife of Krishna. Why don't you give Krishna to me in as a donation? Like, you know, you do the ritual of donating this one to me, and then you can buy back the Lord from me by giving me equal quantity of gold to his weight. So that was the arrangement which Narada suggests.
So basically he is saying that in charity, Satyabhama offers her husband to Narada.
Right.
And then buys back her husband by offering Narada amount of gold equivalent in weight to Krishna.
Krishna.
So now that she alone has bought Krishna from Narada, Krishna is solely her property, right?
Exactly. So that's the arrangement. So Satyabhama thinks it's a wonderful idea and the whole thing happens. You know, Krishna is donated to Narada and Narada and Krishna is just smiling and, you know, going through the drama. So then Krishna is seated on the Tulabharam, the one side of the scale, one scale. And then they start putting gold on the other side. And to their shock, you know, kilos and kilos of gold is placed, but the scale does not move down even 1 inch. The scale on which Krishna is sitting is firmly on the ground, and the other scale on which nothing seems to be, you know, even lifting the pan on which Krishna is sitting even one bit. So then all the gold in the palace is being emptied, and Satyabhama starts putting all the gold she is wearing, but still there's no hope. And suddenly, you know, she realizes Narada is giving a mischievous smile. So she realizes this Narada is even capable of taking away Krishna. You know, because you've not bought it back. You've given it to him. You've given the Lord to him. And he might just take the Lord and go away.
Narada is the greatest devotee of the Lord.
Right. So that's when, you know, Satyabhama runs to Mother Rukmini. And she starts telling that, you know, you have to do something. This Narada has come up with a ploy by which he's going to take away Lord Krishna from us.
And I have used all the gold available in the palace. And apparently Lord Krishna is not moved one bit.
Right.
You know, Prem, here it's very symbolic. All the gold in the palace will not move Lord Krishna one bit. It's not only a physical truth, it's also a very, very powerful message for all of us that one cannot buy the Lord. One cannot attract or pull the Lord towards oneself with power, influence or money. What we need is what Rukmini possessed.
Exactly. And, you know, Rukmini comes there and she sees the whole scene, and the beauty of Rukmini is she realizes the message which Krishna was trying to give out. And then she says, see, Krishna is not the body. He's not the form which you see. He's the Lord and you cannot weigh him equal with anything else. So he says, the Lord is equivalent only to one other thing, the form of the Lord.
Swami says that the minute Rukmini realizes what's happening, she is distraught on one side because she cannot think of a life without Krishna. She's, you know, instantaneously and spontaneously her love for Krishna springs forth and she says, all my possessions, all the world's possessions will not equal the Lord because the Lord is much grander than all this. And in all her humility and love for Krishna, she goes and she doesn't know what to offer. So the first thing that she sees, Swami says, is a tulsi plant, the holy basil. She plucks a leaf from that tulsi plant and she says, Krishna, I have nothing that is as valuable as you other than your name itself, Krishna. And chanting the name of Krishna, she places that leaf of the tulsi. You know, it's one holy basil leaf. Scientifically, it might possibly weigh about 1,000 micrograms. And she places that on the other pan of the scale. The instant that she places the leaf, Lord Krishna goes up and the pan with the leaf comes down. And Rukmini has apparently bought back Lord Krishna from Narada with that one leaf of tulsi which she gives to Narada.
Exactly. You know, Swami explains this very beautifully. He says that she first says that only the name of the Lord can equal the form of the Lord. And it is said that when she says that, Narada says, I cannot accept that. You know, you want something which is, which is tangible. You have to give me something which is tangible.
Huh.
And that is when Rukmini, you know, plucks this tulsi leaf and she says Krishna and places it. Swami explains that the name of the Lord and the form of the Lord are equal. So that balances the weight, and because of this tulsi leaf, the pan comes down.
Pan comes down.
Because there's extra weight.
That's right.
You know, Swami explains that. And that is the beauty, and that is the beauty of Namasmarana, because only the name of the Lord can equal the glory of the form of the Lord.
And you know, this story is also used to show, you know, Swami says, Krishna says that he is happy with phalam pushpam patram toyam.
Right.
That even a leaf, a flower, some water or a fruit offered with love is enough to please the Lord. And this is often the example that is quoted to show how even a leaf offered with love is enough to completely win over the Lord, because Rukmini won over the Lord from Narada with the leaf. You know, Prem, you said that Swami says that the name of the Lord was equal to the form of the Lord, and it was only the weight of the tulsi leaf that was extra that made the pan come down. Now, Swami has on several occasions also stated that the name of the Lord is not only equal to the form of the Lord, at times it is even greater than the form of the Lord. And I remember this was in a discourse that Swami delivered in Vrindavan on the 24th of May 2008. See, 2008, so Swami's voice was a little fragile, and therefore the audio clip is not so great to be played. But Swami definitely said this. He said that during the construction of the bridge to Lanka, when Rama had to build the bridge to Lanka, all the army of monkeys, imagine it was monkeys building the bridge, while artists depict them as strong, powerful bodied monkeys. It is only symbolic, because they were just monkeys whose power came from Lord Rama.
Right.
You know, I think we are going into the Ramkatha Rasavahini a little bit, but definitely this story Swami narrates in that discourse. He says that when the monkeys carried boulders, now imagine humans cannot carry boulders. Even for that extent, bears, and it's only possibly the elephants that can carry boulders. But here are monkeys carrying boulders, and we even hear of, it is also said that the mountains were plucked from the far north,
right,
and they were passed down to the south of India, which is 3000 kilometers, you know, the distance. But that is the strength a monkey can get with the Lord's grace. And these stones were thrown into the water to build the brick, but they were all sinking. And that is when Hanuman comes up with the idea of writing Rama's name on the rock. So Swami says that the minute they started writing Rama on the rock, the rocks began to float. But then he continues to tell in the discourse that the rocks floated, no doubt, but they began floating away from each other. So that is when Hanuman comes up with a modification of his original idea and says, write Ra on one rock, Ma on another rock, the Lord's name can never be split apart. And that is the reason when you write Ra on one rock and Ma on the other rock, the rocks get attracted and they come and stick to each other. And that is how the entire bridge to Lanka was built. And you know, Swami says, the message of Rama from the bridge building story is that the form may sink, but the name will never sink. You know, because there is another story, you know, which goes, it's an aside, it's a poet's imagination, but it's very beautiful. The poet writes that apparently, you know, Lord Rama saw all this happening, the bridge was being built, and he said, wow, look at, you know, this is a poet's imagination. So he says, Rama is so powerful. I mean, my name is so powerful. So when nobody was watching, he just picks up a boulder and goes and throws it in the ocean. And to his shock and dismay, the rock sinks. And Rama immediately looks around, hoping that there was nobody seeing him. You know, because here is his name that is holding the rock floating, but when he actually throws a rock, it is sinking. And when he saw around, there was nobody watching except Hanuman. You know, that's another thing that shows the glory of Hanuman. He is always focused on Rama, nothing else. Any time of the day, any time of the year, his focus is Rama and Rama always. So when Rama throws this, there's nobody watching, but Hanuman watches. So Rama is a little, you know, red-faced, because Hanuman has seen that he has thrown a rock, it has sunk. But the love of Hanuman, the beauty of Hanuman comes to Rama and says, Rama, this is bound to happen. The rocks floating there show that you might be a rock, but if you carry the Lord's name, if you carry Rama's name, you will float in the Bhavasagara, even though you're a rock. But remember, always be in the Sharanagati of Rama. Because if Rama lets go of you, then you have no hope in life. Rama, when if you let go of the stone, how can it ever float? If you let go of a boat, even the boat will sink. Why only a rock? So Rama, whatever happens, never let go of me. And the poet imagines that Rama smiles and pats Hanuman and says, yes, Hanuman, you are indeed a true devotee. So when Swami says like that, you know, I am directly quoting from the Satya Sai Speaks of that discourse, where Swami says, it is the name that is eternal, not the form. Therefore, contemplate on the name of God, have his direct realization, install him on your in your heart and merge with him. So, you know, that is the power of Namasmarana. Of course, Swami has always said that the name of the Lord equals the form of the Lord. But I think it is very, very symbolic that towards the last few years, Swami said that the form is also impermanent, the name is eternal, and therefore the name of the Lord is greater than the form of the Lord itself.
You know, remembering that, of course, this is a most apt time for that, because even as we sit, for many, many years we sat and did bhajans, and, you know, we did not have to imagine the form of the Lord. Of course, in the nights when we sat, you know, we carried the memories of seeing Swami in the morning during the darshan time. But today, we are in a predicament that we need to draw Swami's form right in front of us through the sincerity with which we take the form, take the name. And that is in itself an opportunity. You know, when just an aside, we are of course talking about Namasmarana, we're talking about bhajans as Swami has given. You know, very interestingly, yesterday I just googled for the word bhajan. I just wanted to see what is the general information on the bhajan. And there is, of course, in a Wikipedia page. And in the last line of that page, there is a description of Sai bhajans. What is the speciality of Sai bhajans?
Aha,
and
okay.
there was a huge description of how the bhakti movement from the south actually brought bhajans, gave it a new life, the sampradaya bhajans of the south, and then you had the bhajans from the tradition of Meera, from the tradition of Tukaram, and all these people. And finally, the last word it was Sai bhajans is, again, by devotees of Bhagwan Sri Satya Sai Baba. But what is special about it is, it even praises the religions of Christianity, Islam, and all other religions. You know, there is a praise and there is a word of all other forms and all other, you know, ways of worshipping the Lord. And that's the speciality. And Swami says, you know, in that discourse which we quoted sometime back, I think
it was on the 3rd of March, 1992.
Right, it was actually a Shivratri discourse. You know, there Swami talks about the different kinds of Sankirtan. Swami says, there are four types of Sankirtan. One is Guna Sankirtan, you know, where you talk of the Lord's form, in attributes of the Lord.
The qualities
of the Lord. The other is Leela Sankirtan, and you talk of what the Lord did when he was a little child, what he did when he went out.
His actions
and the, you know, miracles which he performed. And then Swami said there is Bhava Sankirtan, where the Sankirtan is more an expression of the feeling that the devotee feels. And you know, it varies from devotee to devotee. Like, you know, Thyagaraja, depending on his mood, he sang. You know, sometimes he shouted at the Lord and the very next moment he reconciled. So that is Bhava Sankirtan, where, you know, the feeling of the devotee is expressed as music.
We see it in Sai bhajans, you know, because some of them call Shama out to Swami
karo
as mother.
Some say Kshama karo.
Some call out to him as a friend.
Right.
So depending on the feeling, some revel in joy. Some others, you know, they seek daya and karuna and krupa. So all kinds of emotions and navarasas, if we can call it so in Sanskrit. Everything is there in the Sai bhajan.
Right. And the fourth one is Nama Sankirtan, where, you know, it's just the name, like Hare Rama, Hare Krishna, Hare Rama, Krishna, that kind of, you know, only the name of the Lord keeps repeating. There's no description, there's no, you know, there's nothing you can translate into a different language. It's the same in every language, that kind of a bhajan. And Swami, in that very discourse, went on to say that the beauty of Sai bhajans, or the beauty of the bhajans that happen in Prashanti Nilam, is it covers all these four aspects, or all these four types of Sankirtan. And imagine what a beautiful thing it is. You're sitting in front of the Lord and you're able to do all these types of Sankirtan, thinking of the Lord.
Exactly. The exact quote is, Swami says, while in each of the previous aeons, the devotees adopted one or the other method of singing the glories, it is a supreme good fortune of the residents of Prashanti Nilayam to be able to enjoy all the four forms of Sankirtana. The bhajan sung here are a combination of all these four forms, which is Leela Sankirtana, Guna Sankirtana, Bhava Sankirtana and Nama Sankirtana. So I think that is the final authority.
And I think, you know, that is why Swami is, first of all, encouraged bhajans every day, and, you know, that extra dose of bhajans during some festivals like Shivratri and, of course, Akhanda Bhajan, which is coming this weekend. Now, coming back to what we were discussing of why of Namasmarana, of course, the points we covered were like how a mind which is unoccupied is given a task, and it is given a name because the name is equivalent to the form. That is the reason why you don't contemplate anything, but you contemplate on God.
And when you do that, all your stresses, your worries, everything seem to vanish automatically. And you are filled with a kind of joy and peace, a serene joy and peace, which is what all of us seek.
And the other thing, if you look at it, you know, all these three what we spoke of is when you think of the Lord as above and you as somebody who is seeking refuge. But Swami says that internally you and the Lord are one. You know, you belong to exactly where the Lord belongs. You know, you are nothing but a spark of the divine. So in a sense, when you do Namasmarana, you not only are praying or seeking succor, but you are actually trying to that space where you actually belong. You are trying to connect to that purity which you really are. You are trying to become one with that equanimity which is your real nature. Because these are all qualities of the Lord which are essentially your qualities. And that is what happens when we pray or when we sing or when we do Namasmarana when in a problem. Because when you are in a problem, you are, without your knowledge, reminding yourself that after all, I am not this body. After all, I am not this person who is undergoing this problem. I am one with the Lord.
And that truth is always liberating.
Right.
You know, we spoke about how the name is the only substitute for the form of the Lord, if not even greater than the form of the Lord, as Swami says in a few discourses. And you know, this is evident when Swami tells us the story of how Bharata, Rama's brother, is so distraught with, you know, it was supposed to be the best time of his life. It became the worst time of his life because he's now being separated from Rama. His father dies. He has had a bitter quarrel with his mother. And you know, a kingdom has been thrust upon him and he is like a villain. It is because of him being the ruler that Rama is being sent to exile. At such situation, you know, Bharata is able to turn around that situation over its head and make the worst time in his life again into the best time of the life. How? Simply by surrendering his entire kingdom to Rama. In fact, he places sandals, that is the slippers worn by, the wooden slippers worn by Rama, symbolic of the truth that it is Rama who is ruling and I am at his feet and just administering justice and whatever rule on his behalf. So the sandals of Rama are placed on the throne and Bharata himself retires into the forest, and Swami says that he spends all his time in contemplation of Rama. And then Swami says, when Rama returns from the forest, when he is going through the streets of Ayodhya, people are confused as to whom should they garland. Because he says, Bharata and Rama look so alike to each other. Again, the story has such a great symbolism. Swami says, when you take the name of the Lord and you are involved in thoughts of the Lord, you begin to look like the Lord. Though in the story it is as if only the physical looks, it is symbolic of the truth that you become the Lord when you engage yourself in thoughts of the Lord and in Namasmarana. And that is what happened. Bharata begins to look like Rama. And Swami says, Bharata actually begins to bow down to Rama and say, "Oh Rama, people are happy. Oh Rama, people are happy." That is how the people get the clue as to who is Bharata, who is Rama. And they are able to garland Rama instead of garlanding Bharata. So that should be another great incentive for each one of us. Because when we think that we are all pilgrims on that journey towards realizing our true self, Namasmarana is a very easy, very rewarding and very, very powerful way of realizing our oneness with Swami.
And two other examples which come to mind, you know, is one thing which, what happens to Draupadi? That's a very classic example of, you know, she's there being humiliated in front of her husband. Nobody is there to, you know, come to her rescue. Imagine that's the worst situation a woman goes through. But even at that point, she starts calling out to the name of Krishna. And when she starts doing that, a point comes when, you know, she's kind of removed from the pain she's in. She's lost her consciousness of what is happening around her. And I think most of the time when they depict it, I think whether it is written like that in the Mahabharata or not, but in every depiction of that scene, it will come that when that finally that a miracle happens, of course Krishna comes and saves her honor, but when it happens, she is actually lost. She is not in fear, she is not in pain. And that is what Namasmarana can do.
The paintings, even if we now see, they depict Draupadi standing with her hands folded, actually not even trying in the least to hold on to her sari. She is also unaware that Lord Krishna is bestowing an infinite length of sari. She just is totally lost, is totally beyond body consciousness. It's almost like, I don't care whatever you want. So on one hand, Krishna protects her modesty, no doubt. But Draupadi has reached that point where she says, my modesty does not matter to me at all. I don't care because I am beyond the body. She has reached that ultimate state. So in that sense, the worst possible situation of her life, through simple smarana, becomes the best possible situation in her life.
It's the, you know, a very, very graphic and very beautiful example that is, because the Lord's help will definitely come. You know, if you've prayed to Him, if you've surrendered to Him, the Lord's help will definitely come. But till that moment when the Lord's help comes, instead of losing hope, what you have to do is hold on to Him by doing Namasmarana.
I think, Prem, you know, the time in our studio is 1:30. We have several more facets to explore. We will do that. And this was the most important question, the why of Namasmarana. The others, the how, when, where, what, are all relatively easier once we are convinced of the why. So, dear listeners, we'll take a little break here and we will play to you what we will play to you a song in the glory of the Lord's name, and enjoy the song, and we will be back after that to continue on this.
ఒకటేనా ఈ అంతరములు నీకెందుకురా? కందరు మానవులొకటేనా ఈ అంతరములు నీకెందుకురా? మానవ దేవే మాధవ దేవా, మానవ దేవే మాధవ దేవ, మనుషులు దీనిని మరువరాదురా. ఈ నామమే మధురమురా, ఆ స్మరణే మూర్తికి మార్గమురా. కలిమీ బలిమీ అధికారాలు కనులకు రేయును పొరలు తెరలు, కలిమీ బలిమీ అధికారాలు కనులకు రేయును పొరలు తెరలు. జీవితమే ఒక దారడిరా, జీవితమే ఒక దారడిరా, నీవు నేనను భేదమేలరా. సాయి నామమే మధురమురా, ఆ స్మరణే ముక్తికి మార్గమురా. సాయి రాముడే అవతరించరా, సత్యము ధర్మము స్థాపించుటకై సాయి రాముడే అవతరించరా. ఈ పరమార్థము తెలిసిన నరుడే, స్మరణే ముక్తికి మార్గమురా. పలు తలపులతో పలుగిడు వారికి ఫలితము శూన్యమురా. సాయి నామమే మధురమురా, ఆ స్మరణే ముక్తికి మార్గమురా, ఆ స్మరణే ముక్తికి మార్గమురా, ఆ స్మరణే ముక్తికి మార్గమురా.
Well, that song says it, Prem. You know, Asmarane Mukti Ki Margamura, meaning thinking of the Lord, that is Namasmarana, or chanting His name, that is the way towards Mukti or the ultimate liberation. What a beautiful song.
Right. Now we've kind of come to the conclusion that yes, Namasmarana is necessary. Namasmarana is definitely beneficial, and Namasmarana is something which is also easy. It's not only profound, but it's also the simplest way available, as Swami says, in the Kali Yuga. But having said that, people will ask, all right, now what do we do? You know, how do we do it? Because you've told that this dish is tasty. How do you prepare the dish? What are the ingredients which are required, and what is the modus operandi of getting it done? You know, what comes to mind when you say that somebody is sitting and doing japam or doing namasmarana?
So there's a sitting mat, right? He's seated in front of a picture of the Lord,
right?
In a relatively
calm,
neat and
peaceful and neat
environment. Yeah, so right. There, it's a puja room invariably. So there is God's picture with flowers and incense sticks, and of course the door is shut so that you don't hear outside
no
sounds.
Disturbance. Nobody disturbs you.
Nobody disturbs you. You're closing your eyes and
Japamala.
The name. Yeah, of course.
Right,
yeah.
Without Japmala, of course.
Yeah, you have to count, right? You have to do 5 malas, 6 malas. So right. 108 times is 1 mala. Mm. So that is to keep count. So you have a Japmala. Or modern day, you know, there is this counters.
Counters, clippers. Or
yeah, you can just keep clicking.
Clicking.
So it keeps a count. so that you can submit that to the Lord as if, you know, I've done 1 lakh times, so now I deserve a car. For 100, I get a chocolate.
It's still not happened, but they might have some Facebook integration with that thing where every 108 or 1008, it gets updated.
Yes, your status page. Get updated that Arvind has finished 108 namams.
Right.
I really don't understand what is the... Anyway, so that is definitely a part of the Namasmarana schedule. And yes, you close your eyes and you chant the name.
Right. Of course, you know, when you say a name, you need to be initiated into that name, right?
Oh, yes.
You need somebody to tell you that this name is suitable for you. I think most of the meditation and most of the gurus, Swami says, you know, there are different types of gurus. I think Swami names some 9 types of gurus in that: mantra guru, yantra guru, bodha guru, bada guru, Swami would say.
Bada guru.
Right. You know, the guru whom you go to in
you have
times
troubles.
Of troubles. So you need some guru who will give you a mantra or a name, right, which is suitable for your persona. So quite a lot of things before you start doing Namasmarana.
Me, you know, just now, I think all our listeners will be cursing us saying, just now they said this is the simplest and easiest way and Kali Yuga and all that, and now they're throwing up a lot of conditions. Dear listeners, the reason we are throwing up these conditions is to show that there are glorious examples in history where different people violated different of these conditions and it didn't make any difference. For example, we were speaking about being initiated into the mantra. It reminded me of Valmiki. No, Valmiki was actually Ratnakara.
Right.
Ratnakara, the robber, the highway robber who would murder people to take money, crazy behind that to sustain his family. And when he realized that his family would have none of his karmas, he realized that it's no use leading such a sinful life. So Ratnakara transformed into Valmiki. So in that transformation, what happened is, he goes to the sages, the Saptarishis, the 7 sages, who initiate him into the most powerful name of Rama. But what an initiation it is, because Valmiki misunderstands. He does not hear it as Rama, he thinks it's Mara. Rama, Mara, he thinks it's Mara. And he keeps chanting Mara, Mara. But Swami in his discourse explains how the Mara, Mara, Mara continuously becomes Mara, 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 Mara. It becomes Rama. Rama. Mara becomes Rama. And so lost is he in that name that an anthill, a termite nest builds around him, which in Sanskrit Valmikam. Is called Valmikam.
Mm.
The Valmikam builds around him, and since he emerges out of the Valmikam, he is Valmiki. So Valmiki is definitely the greatest devotee of the Lord, who has definitely won the affection of the Lord. And he did it by chanting the name Ulta, opposite. So, you know, there goes the initiation condition. You don't actually need to be initiated into a name. The Lord's name is powerful as it is. In fact, in Valmiki's case, even when chanted opposite, in the Ulta manner. So, actually there's no need of initiation. Go ahead and chant it to your heart's content. You're definitely bound to succeed.
Even when you talk of initiation, the initiation itself is a procedure.
Uh-huh.
No way, you have to go, you have to give Guru Dakshina, you have to sit, and you know, the Guru meditates and finds the right name for you. The other story which comes to my mind is that of Saint Kabir.
Uh-huh.
You know, the legend has it that he's brought up in a Muslim family. Of course, he's not born in that family. Nobody knows
his birth. Origin.
He's brought up by, I think, a Muslim couple who's a tailor by profession.
That's why he's named Kabir.
Right, Kabir. And he gets fascinated, you know, by the spiritual journey. He wants to become a spiritual aspirant. So he goes and he wants to become the disciple of a master. I think Ramanand. Guru Ramanand is the person whom he approaches. But he realizes that being of an Islamic origin, he might not be accepted in that school. So in the early hours of the morning, when Guru Ramanand goes to the ghat to have his bath and do his sandhya, he goes and hides himself in one of the steps.
Hmm.
And when the Guru walks up, he kind of kicks him by mistake. You know, he trips over him and he says Ram Ram. And he accepts that as his mantra. And
wow,
what a great saint Sant Kabir has become.
In fact, I oftentimes think that Guru Ramanand has got glory because of Kabir.
Absolutely.
And and the other thing is, you know, we think we need serene settings. I remember when we sit for Namasmarana, you hear a donkey braying, you hear some noise on the door and you get irritated, it breaks. But what about Prahallada then? You know, the Prahallada, he was thrown from the top of a mountain and instead of adrenaline kicking in, what kicked in him is the Lord's name. He was thrown into a pit of fire. He was thrown into the ocean. He was let into a room filled with snakes. He was trampled upon by elephants. Nothing happened to him, and all the while the only thing Prahlada did was to think of the Lord. So again, a clean place where there's no sound, with nice aroma of incense sticks. You know, all these are add-ons. Of course, they will help in focusing the mind a little bit, but they are definitely not prerequisites for Namasmarana. Namasmarana can be done anywhere, anytime.
And the other thing which you think of, sorry, is when you realize that you have to, you know, there is a method of sitting in a certain way. You sit straight back. You, as you said, sit in a clean room, sit in front of a picture. You kind of associate even physical inactivity with Namasmarana for some reason. Mm. You know, it is not just chanting the name, but you also have to sit still. You have to be without doing anything. You have to be sitting quietly. But I think this has completely been ruled out or said that this is not a prerequisite by the devotion which was shown by Mother Shabari. Because she did not sit in one place and keep chanting of the Lord's name. In fact, there is no account of her doing Namasmarana at all.
Mm.
But what did she do? You know, she was only given a piece of information by her guru who was departing.
Matanga Muni.
Right, Matanga Muni, who was departing from his body. He said, you don't leave this ashram because at one point in time, before you discard your body, the Lord as Avatar Ram will come and he will come here to receive your hospitality. Imagine a piece of information is given to her and she says, what will happen when the Lord comes? Which way will he come? He'll have to come through the forest. The path is not clear. There are thorns there. Let me go and clear it. And then she says, you know, it is said that he is very tall. So the branches will hit him. So she starts breaking the branches. And she says, what will I offer him when he comes? So I need to give him the best which is there in the forest. So she starts looking out for the, you know, the best, the most sweetest fruits. And within them she starts saying that, how can I give something which is not fully ripened? So she starts tasting. So what she does is she's involving herself in activity throughout. And all activities were centered on that physical visit of Lord Rama.
You know, this is a very, very powerful message, Prem, and I feel that all of us must imbibe this in our life. The way Namasmarana, you know, it is not as if you have to set aside a time in the day and set aside a place to do it. If it is the feeling that counts. It is the feeling that counts. You know, Swami often says when Draupadi called out to Krishna for rescuing, she calls out, hey Gokulavasi Krishna, Mathuravasi Krishna. And Swami says Krishna did not appear because he has to travel from Mathura and come till there. He has to travel from Gokula and come. The minute Draupadi says Hridaya Nivasi Krishna, her heart is so close to her. Instantly Krishna responds with the flow of sari. Infinite length of sari. So, you know, more than the other things, what matters is the feeling with which you call.
There's another story which I remember at this point. Mm. Exactly when you're saying, it is believed that there's one temple of Lord Hanuman. Mm. And if you go 30 days continuously there and do 30 padakshanas, on the 30th day, Lord Hanuman will appear in front of you and bless you.
Okay.
So there was this very pious man who wanted to try this out. So he goes very sincerely, has a bath every day of those 30 days, does 30 pradakshinas. And on the 30th day, Hanuman appears. And what does Hanuman say? Actually, I would have given you darshan on the first day, but you were so fixed with the idea that I'll come only on the 30th day. So I had to wait for 30 days. You know, when you do it with the feeling that only at this point God will come to me, or only after these preconditions are satisfied God will come to me, I think that is the power that you're giving to the preconditions. You know, to whatever you feel is important.
Because after all, when Swami says, you are God, I am God, we are God, and our will is actually God's will. That's what happens. We are the ones who bless ourselves, or we are the ones who curse ourselves. Going back to the Shabari story, one important message which I said that we all must take is to do all our jobs as if we are doing it for Swami. Then perfection automatically comes in. Job satisfaction automatically comes in. You know, I don't care, Prem, for example, if I say I want to write an article for pleasing Swami. If I have truly done that, tomorrow if you say, you know, Arvind, your article is not up to the mark, it's not so good, so you rubbish it. If I have truly done it for Swami, it won't affect me at all, because your praise and your appreciation was not at all the intention behind which, intention with which the article was written. The article was written to make Swami and happy, and if Swami is happy, that's it. It doesn't matter whether you like it. In the same way, somebody comes and says, Arvind, this is awesome article. This is fantastic. Again, it should not elate me, because it was not done to please. So what happens when we do something for the Lord is the very act of doing it itself gives us satisfaction and elation, and no longer are we dependent on the result of that action to give us satisfaction. See the difference, Prem. Suppose you go to somebody and ask, what work do you do? He says, I'm a driver. Oh, okay, you're a driver. A driver is a low category, menial class, not a... Then he says, you know, every day for Darshan, Swami's porte car, I drive it and... Oh, God's driver. Immediately your response changes, your eyes light up, you fold your hands, salute the person, though he's a driver. See, what is the fact that makes a person great is not that he's a driver, but he's Swami's driver. I'm a gardener. Oh, you're a gardener. Yajur Mandir Gardens. Okay. So Yajur Mandir Garden, Swami is gardener. That's the same thing. You're a photographer. Swami's photographer. You're a writer. Swami's writer. You are a speaker. Swami's speaker. You're an actor. Swami's actor. The minute you become a god's, whatever, karmachari, you become that. So why all the respect, all the love, all the adoration, everything, if you're looking even in a materialistic sense, come when you do something for God. Why don't we do everything for God? That is what Shabari proved. Namasmarana does not actually mean sitting in one place, dedicating 3 hours for thinking of that form and chanting that name. If we do all our work with love and compassion, thinking that Swami has assigned this job for me. I'm an electrical engineer. The job I do is Swami has assigned to me and I have to make Swami happy. Then I don't bother about what others think. And automatically, work becomes worship.
Very true. And in fact, it is because this is not very easy for all of us. Of course, this is definitely what we all have to do. But because it is not easy, that is why Swami kind of encourages something which even Shabari did. And if you go to the centers, they have a chair for Swami. They place some water for Swami. They cook for Swami. You know, there are many houses where they cook dishes for Swami. Why do they do this? It is because till you reach the point where you do everything for God, there are at least some things which you do imagining that, you know, Swami is visiting my house. You know that He is omnipresent, but you imagine that God is visiting. So if God is visiting physically, what would you do? The idea is to do things keeping your mind centered on God.
And when you do that, Prem, it resolves so many issues. I remember one center, they were asking me, saying that, you know, it is difficult. Swami's chair has always to be placed on the left or the right, I forget what it is. Now, you know, we are having a problem here, you know, there's a slight leakage in the roof. So what do we do? Shall we pull the chair little front or can we shift it to the other side? You know, it becomes like a moral dilemma if you do it mechanically. As you said, if you realize that if Swami were to come to the center, will you make Him sit 1 feet away from that leaking roof or whatever is the problem? You will try to give the best possible solution, right? It doesn't matter whether Swami is on the left or the right, or whether there is one kerchief on His chair or two kerchiefs, or regularity of changing. You know, these are all the rituals that people get into and forget the spirit behind. Swami says, only when you realize the spirit behind the ritual will it become spiritual. So I feel even in our own centers and our samitis, when we have like these questions on protocol or whatever, there might be guidelines. But irrespective of the guidelines, the most important thing is the spirit. Let us not forget that this is Swami coming, and this is not just some tradition or custom. If Swami were to come here, what would I do? Do that. Simple as that. I feel that is the most simple and easy answer.
Right. And I think this is the reason why Swami has encouraged us to do many things. You write a letter to Swami. You think, what will Swami's... I mean, you know physically Swami's reactions. So accordingly you will write a letter. But it is, you know, in a sense you're fooling yourself, but it also aids you to think of Swami. What will Swami's response be? You know, there would be these things of... Swami would be sitting in the veranda and boys who are walking in front of Swami will crawl. Those who walk behind Swami will walk properly. You know, as though Swami can see only in front of Him. But the idea is, you think that I am in Swami's presence. You know, I need to carry out myself. In a sense, you are bringing in unity of thought, word, and deed.
Automatically, when you're speaking anything, just think, if Swami were present here, He is present. You know Swami is omnipresent. And that is why each of our satsang here, we begin saluting Swami who is ever present here. And I can cross my heart and say that whatever I am speaking here, I would definitely have spoken the same. If Swami were to be physically sitting here, Swami is physically sitting here, I am not able to see Him, but if I were able to see Him also, I will speak. And that is why it is so important to do everything, keeping in mind that Swami is always with us, because then automatically we'll do the right things. What we won't do when Swami is not present, we will not do because we are convinced that Swami is with us. I remember a very, a kind of a controversial question. People mm-hmm. may say it is controversial, mm-hmm. but this is what burns and people ask. It is the Western culture. In one of the Western countries, during a satsang, somebody asks, what about dating? What does Swami say about dating? Now, this seems very controversial. I mean, I don't know as such what has Swami said about dating. So, before that, it becomes very, very difficult to answer. So, a simple solution at such times is, when you go out, say, whatever you do, if you always take Swami along with you. I remember, because this was not a solution that I gave, this was a solution another speaker gave. I was thinking that this is a question that has caught. What do we answer to this? Because I don't know. He said it so beautifully. He said, when you go for a date, take Swami along with you. Let Swami be at your table. And what you would do in Swami's presence, do on the date. No problem. What you would not do in Swami's presence, don't do in the date. Simple as that. Wow, isn't that a very elegant solution? I mean, this solution holds good for all times, for all kinds of actions. What you would do when Swami is there, do it. When God is in your presence, do it. That is such a beautiful touchstone, a practical way to convert all our work into worship, because we are doing everything for the Lord.
And, you know, that is one of the boons of knowing God in a form. When you have the idea of even worshipping a guru, is that because it is when, you know, you call God as Gunatita, you call him beyond attributes, but when he shows attributes, when he says that these are the set of my attributes, though you know that he's beyond attributes, you say God, Swami says that these are my likes, these are my dislikes. I like when my students wear whites. I like when my students do certain things. I like when my devotees do bhajans. You know, God is beyond likes and dislikes, but he says that I like these things, so that you can have your mind centered on God and do some things and say, Swami, I'm doing this for you. I wouldn't have done it otherwise. I wouldn't be wearing whites all the time, but I'm doing it because it pleases you. And it is an ability to, you know, it is an opportunity which is given to you to connect to the Lord, to do smarana in all these forms, like what Shabari did.
Till you yourself become Gunatita, after which you are not bound by any rules. But as long as you are bound, you know, when Swami comes in the human form, he himself binds himself with those rules. When it is applicable to Swami, why not for us? So, till we become Gunatita, let us follow what Swami has said.
Right. And you know, many of these rituals, especially since we are talking about bhajans, we are talking about Akhanda Bhajan, you know, many people raise these questions, do we still have to sing Aarti? Do we still have to, you know, why not we just sing bhajans? Why not we sing just carols? And why not we sing just, you know, some other devotional songs? The idea is, this is a template created by Swami. There is nothing sacrosanct about the template, but it is sacrosanct because it has been given by Swami.
And plus,
I am adhering to it only because it is given by Swami.
And plus, you know, one more reason why you can't convert an Akhand Bhajan into a song and a show session, because Swami says this is a time when everybody congregates, to everybody to sing out the name of the Lord. If you have a special song sung by a great artist, of course it might be musical to the ears, but the people cannot participate as much. And that is why in the Akhand Bhajan also Swami many times used to insist on Nama Sankirtana, which is easy. For example, if you say there are foreigners coming, there are people from Russia, there are people from Latin America coming here, they might not be able to sing your Dina Dukhiyon Se Prem Karo Mera Sai Prasanna Hoga.
Nor will they be able to relate to it.
Exactly, because it's a different language. But Vithala Jai Vithala Panduranga Vithala, it's just the name of the Lord. Krishna Murari Bhava. I mean, just when you sing only the name of the Lord, the Nama Sankirtana, they're able to appreciate. So Swami would even encourage that. You know, Prem, this time in our studio is 1:15 and it's time to conclude. And I think we have finished the why of Namasmarana, the what of Namasmarana, and the how of Namasmarana. What is left is just one question which can be answered in one statement. Not one question, there are three questions. Who, when, and where? And I think Swami answers that in a statement in his discourse when he says, Sarvada Sarvakale Sarvatra Harichintana. Everyone, at all times, in all places. So who is the one to do Namasmarana? Everyone. When is the time to do Namasmarana? Every time. Where is the time to do namasmarana? Where is the place to do namasmarana? Every place. So I think with that we conclude the who, when and where of namasmarana. And I feel it is not a coincidence that one of the most popular bhajans with which Swami would always conclude his discourses was Hari Bhajan Abina Sukha Shanti Nahi. That bhajan in itself, the first line of the bhajan says, if you want sukha, that is joy, and shanti, which is peace, there is no option other than bhajan, which basically means thinking and singing of the Lord. So that is something we should keep in mind as we enter the weekend of the global Akhanda Bhajan.
And just as a concluding statement, what Swami would say is, Akhanda Bhajan means, you know, that which is not breaking, that which is not stopping, that which is done, which is continuously. And Swami would say that it is very good that you're participating in this 24-hour Akhanda Bhajan, but remind yourself that your life itself should become an Akhanda Bhajan, where you think of the Lord every moment, as Swami said, Sarvada Sarvakaleshu. At every moment, at every time, the idea of this Akhanda Bhajan is to remind you of that goal of when you do Namasmarana every moment, every second.
And so, dear listeners, with that, we bring the satsang to a close. And if you have any further doubts on Namasmarana, I again would like to reiterate, just try it out and you will see the tremendous benefits, after which you yourself will propagate Namasmarana. And the second thing, please don't forget, hashtag GAB2014 whenever you upload any photos of your center during the Akhand Bhajan on Facebook or any other social media, so that all of this can be under this common hashtag, and from any part of the world, anybody will be able to just click on this hashtag and access and see all the beautiful scenes from the global Akhanda Bhajan throughout the world. Wishing all of us a beautiful, heartfelt, soul-filling, enriching bhajan, Akhanda Bhajan. And as Prem said, may this Akhanda Bhajan translate into an Akhanda Bhajan which we do throughout our life, because that alone is what gives us happiness, because happiness lies in union with God. With that, dear listeners, we thank you for tuning in and joining us in our satsang. As always, you're welcome. Your feedback is most welcome and sought after. You can write to listener@radiosai.org. We will conclude this with a song, the other side of which you will be joined by Brother Chandu with his segment, Love to Love.
जलांतर में पालो शाश्वत धाम।